This is Indy's Giant 90.9, WBDG FM HD1, Indianapolis.
Another episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood. We're joined by head coach of the Giants baseball team, Coach Davis. Please welcome James Boyd. Joined by WBDG alum Jackson White. Joining us as a guest on today's episode, please welcome assistant coach of the Ben Davis boys basketball team, Coach Persing. Max Crosby gets shipped off to the Baltimore Ravens for two first-round picks, but then we hear a couple of days ago this trade is actually being resigned and that Max Crosby is actually heading back to the Raiders. Now we move on to the historic Tuesday night in the National Basketball Association, and Bam Adebayo dropping an historic second-highest ever 83 points in NBA history. Welcome back to Hash Marks and Hardwood. Good morning. I'm your host, Bryson Hill, alongside my co-host, Nicholas Mountcastle, on this rainy and chilly Friday, May 1st, 2026. Nicholas, how are you doing on this Friday?
Doing good, you know. As always, it's a Friday, so it's always nice. I get some weekend plans, so that's always good, too.
And joining us on today's episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood, you know his voice. He's the legendary Greg Rakestraw. Greg, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show today, fellas.
Yeah, so glad you were able to join us. Glad to have you. I've met you a couple of times. How's it going? Obviously, no basketball and football season anymore, but we know you're obviously a man of a bunch of crafts. How has kind of this spring window looked for you in the last couple of weeks?
So April, by my standards, is pretty laid back. It got busy again last week, and it gets crazy as of now. So I was doing the math on this yesterday. I think I will be on the play-by-play call for six different sports during the month of May. Obviously, locally, that means Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Picks up the pace. I'll be there next weekend for the Grand Prix, following weekend for qualifications, and then the following Saturday for the latest and greatest installment of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But May for me is also the end of the college baseball season. I do a lot of conference tournament work for ESPN Plus, for the Horizon League, for the baseball and softball tournaments. I'll be up at Taylor for their national tournament postseason. I've got a little tennis coming up on Sunday. I've even got men's volleyball with Ball State and likely taking on Pepperdine tomorrow on ESPN Plus. So May is a potpourri of things and a very busy one at that.
Yeah, so you mentioned you six different sports you could be on the call for. How do you even know that much? How do you even get to know that much? Is it just spending hours on hours of studying each craft? Because I heard you were on the morning show earlier this morning, and you mentioned something about, I think you said you're calling men's volleyball this weekend, correct?
That is correct. So Ball State is ranked number 4 in the country. They are getting to host a round of the NCAA tournament for the first time since well before you guys were born. and because of the fact that they are having graduation weekend, this is a very common college graduation weekend, they could not play in Muncie. So they're going down to Noblesville and playing where the Boom play at Innovation Mile. And they were in need of a production company and a play-by-play guy, and I could help provide both of those. So I do call the boys' volleyball state finals for the IHSAA, but primarily it's women's volleyball. So I know volleyball, and everything translates. It's just going to be a little faster speed and a little taller, and the net's going to be a little higher when I'm there tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I guess this leads into my first proper question for you. How do you kind of, when you're switching between each games, obviously you're very busy. How difficult is that for you to switch between each sport so fast paced? You go from baseball to volleyball, or you go from football to basketball, and also different levels as well. Like, some rules are different at different levels. So if you're calling a college basketball game, then compared to a high school basketball game, like, obviously the shot clock's one of those different rules. How have you been able to adjust to kind of going from sport to sport and level to level, as you call these games so commonly?
Part of it is being old and having done this for a long time. Experience helps. If you know the lexicon of the sport, if you know how to verbally talk about each sport, and if you know the pacing of the sport, you can interchange. Play-by-play skills are interchangeable. You just have to know how to speak the lingo of the sport and know what the flow of that sport is going to be. And the time that, from a rules standpoint, that the transition can be the toughest is, believe it or not, during the football season. Because on Friday night, I'll have a high school game. On Saturday, I'll have a college game. And then on Sunday, we'll be talking about something with the Indianapolis Colts. And so, there is a line that I use and a joke that I reference on Friday nights where I'll go, hey, just a reminder, folks, the Friday rules and the Saturday rules and the Sunday rules are three different things. There's times like I'll say, hey, this is a penalty here. This wouldn't be tomorrow. This wouldn't be Sunday. And I'll give you a great example of this. The first 6A sectional game we did in football this year was Lawrence Central and Lawrence North. Lawrence Central went to LN and won, and the final play of the game, the quarterback was diving across the end zone going for a touchdown. The ball was knocked out. One of the LC running backs recovered it for the touchdown and the win. In the National Football League and in college football too, that score would not have counted because you have to be the player who fumbled the ball to advance the ball and recover it. But in high school football, that same rule doesn't exist, which allowed Lawrence Central.
I think we might have lost Mr. Rakestraw there, but we'll get him back. Let's see. Let's get him back on real quick. You there, Mr. Rakestraw?
I got you.
All right, there you go.
And so anyway, having that experience of again, just knowing the sport and having done this for a while, that certainly pays off in a scenario like that.
Absolutely. And one of my first questions I was going to ask you mentioned being experienced. Do you remember the first time, or how old you were maybe, when you were kind of got fascinated by all this and you're like, man, this is what I want to do. I want to be a broadcaster. I want to cover all these sports all around the state. How old do you think you would have been around that time, and when did you realize that?
The age of 5 or 6. My mom has recordings of me, like, imitating, like, the news anchor on television when I'm, like, 2. I was drawn to those voices when I was a kid. And my love affair of sports kind of started when I was 5 or 6 years old. Like, I vividly remember going from watching the Muppets on a Saturday afternoon to watching whatever ball game was on a Saturday afternoon, being mesmerized by that. So, like, career fairs for me when I was a kid were a waste of time. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be an announcer for a living. So when I was growing up, it was probably more along the lines of, you know, I was going to be like a television, you know, sports anchor, you know, like to use the Ben Davis alumni example, like a Dave Calabro. Well, it turns out I'm more like Kevin Calabro, his older brother that has done play-by-play for the better part of the last 40 years, and these days is the television voice of the Portland Trailblazers. So, and part of that is where I went to school, the University of Indianapolis. It was easier to kind of go the play-by-play and talk show route than it was. But I also, frankly, had an internship when I was in college at Channel 13, where I worked in the news department. And I learned that, hey, for a lot of folks, this is great. This is not me. This is not what I want to do. I would rather ensure that I am at the game and talking about the game, and more often than not, talking during the game, you know, from a broadcast standpoint. That's really what the path was for me, but frankly, my fascination or love for this began when I was 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah, that's so fascinating, and I think for me, honestly, it's probably just a couple of years ago, but now, you know, I love it. I'm all involved with all the sports. I started getting into Colts football about 6 years ago, I want to say, probably around 2019, 2020, and start getting more involved
with the Pacers. And I guess that that kind of sways into my next question here. Let's talk about the Colts, because you're on the Colts radio. And, of course, one of the bigger talking points, it really seems, not just this season, but the past, ever since Andrew Luck retired, has been the quarterback position. We know Daniel Jones gets re-signed, but there is that question mark with Anthony Richardson. We know he has that option that can be picked up, but it's probably not going to be picked up. Where do you think Anthony Richardson will play next season?
I think the Colts will bring him back if they can't get something for him. Now, I don't think the trade value is very high. I don't think Anthony as a person would be a problem if he is kind of there as an insurance policy, because he's a genuinely good dude. But the Colts are ready to move on and realize that he wasn't ready, they weren't ready, this was not handled properly. There's plenty of fingers of blame to go in different directions as to why it, you know, hasn't worked, et cetera. I think if they can get a draft pick for next year, they would, and frankly, a third day pick is what it would be. I think they would move on. I think, frankly, he may be here working out, and he might be an insurance policy. If somebody were to get hurt during the preseason, if somebody gets hurt in the regular season. But I really think the quarterback depth chart is Daniel Jones 1, Riley Leonard 2, Anthony Richardson 3, and Anthony is probably on the trade block. He is on the trade block. But I think it's more of a, as teams kind of look around at what they got in the draft and who's available in free agency, if somebody were to get hurt, I think Anthony's an insurance policy for somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. And do you think the Colts at all regret for not trying to trade Anthony as high as his stock could have been? Or do you feel like at the time the risk might have been too big because he still was he was not proven yet, but he was coming off that rookie injury. Do you think at all the Colts regret not hitting as high on the trade value for Anthony as they could?
I'm not sure the trade value has ever been high, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
I don't think they were looking to trade him this year, because I do think before he got hurt with the eye injury, he was clearly the backup, and they didn't want to hand the ball to Riley Leonard in his rookie season in case Daniel Jones got hurt. And then Daniel Jones got hurt, and then you immediately say, hey, what's Phillip Rivers doing? And again, because Anthony was injured and could not play at that point. So I don't think there was a window until now where they were willing to trade him. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure the trade value has ever been that. In other words, this is not like they cost themselves a draft pick in the second or third round, and now they're maybe going to get one in the sixth or seventh round. I don't think the trade value for Anthony was ever that high in the first place.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And do you think if that, I mean, let's just be honest, a lot of people said the freak eye accident. I forget, was it a workout band, I believe, or something that is just stretched into his eye, I think. But that
Correct.
Freak accident, really. Do you think the end of that Colts season looks different if Anthony Richardson is the backup? Or do you think it looks fairly similar to what Phillip Rivers and Riley Leonard gave them?
You know, what you're trying to say is, would Anthony have been more successful than Phillip Rivers?
Yeah.
And the answer is, I don't know. The offense would have looked very different. But again, given what his completion percentage was in the time in which he played over his first years with the team, and given the caliber of teams the Colts played to finish the year, the answer to that question is, I don't know. Because I've been around the team now in a working capacity for 25 years. Last year was my 14th year of being a part of the radio network, so year 15 is coming up for me. And I have never seen a finishing kick to the schedule what the Indianapolis Colts had to end the year. You know, you've got the Kansas City game, which ended up being of the last seven in which the Colts lost. The only game was against an under 500 team, but it's the Chiefs. Then the next six that you play was just four different teams, because you played the Texans twice and the Jaguars twice. But all of those teams won at least 12 games. I've never seen a finishing stretch like that.
Yeah, it was brutal.
And for as ugly at times as the Colts offense looked under Phillip Rivers. Again, considering circumstances, he was amazing, but still not what you would normally see from an NFL quarterback. Guys, the team that won the Super Bowl, the Colts led in their building in Rivers' first game in 5.5 years with less than a minute to play. The Colts were still leading that game. So I don't know if Anthony's playing, if the end of the season looks any different. My gut feeling would say, no, it probably doesn't, to be honest with you.
Yeah, quite frankly, you bring up that game against the defending champs, the Seahawks. Like you said, a 60-yard field goal was drilled to give us the lead with under a minute to play, and then you just go down, some bad defense, Seahawks hit a game-winning three. It is what it is, but last Colts-related thing, then we can move on from them. We, in my opinion, a pretty good draft class for the Colts. What is your expectations going into next season for the Colts? Are you expecting the same 9-10 win season, or are you optimistic? What are the expectations?
I think they're about the same boat. You know, I think everything kind of went right early in the year last year, and then everything went wrong. And so maybe the season looks a little bit different, but it's somewhere in the middle. I think kind of given where the Colts were in January, I understand about every move that the Indianapolis Colts made in terms of the priorities had to be re-sign Daniel Jones and re-sign Alec Pierce. The market kind of bared out what you thought Alec Pierce was going to get in the vicinity of 4 years and 30-ish million dollars a year. I think the market got much higher for Daniel Jones than it was anticipated. And I firmly believe the Indianapolis Colts thought they were getting Trey Hendrickson. And then that, what happened in Baltimore happened, and Hendrickson comes off the board, and now the Colts are kind of left holding the bag. And once you got past Crosby and Hendrickson, the market was not as strong. The Colts are banking on Latu and Tui Moloau making the jump this year in years 3 and 2 respectively, and then just kind of going younger and having depth in terms of the pass rush market. You know, from a draft standpoint, their draft bared out what I largely thought it would. You had to go out and get some of the best, you know, defensive players you could find. And frankly, you needed to draft two linebackers early because both those guys probably going to be playing. Because you had to get much younger at linebacker than you were a season ago. So I understand and agree with virtually every move the Indianapolis Colts made during the offseason. But are they a better team than they were a year ago? I'm not sure they are, and I think, frankly, all the circumstances dictated that.
And one more Colts question because this just popped into my head. You mentioned all those off-season departures and additions. Out of all those departures, Michael Pittman, Zaire Franklin, who do you think is going to leave the biggest gap in the Colts offense or defense on the field? Who do you think is the biggest loss of the offseason?
Well, let's throw a couple more out there as well. You know, you knew that Braden Smith, you know, was not coming back. And when they drafted Jalen Travis and knowing that Braden was out of contract, you're probably going to move on. Jalen will be the starting right tackle going into camp.
Nick Cross is another big one as well.
Kenny Moore is on the trading block by his request. And again, I think that's more age and scheme fit. You know, I don't think he fits the way that Lou Anarumo wants to play, where Kenny fit kind of what the last two defensive coordinators and you know, wanted to do. You know, the Colts elected to let Nick Cross walk and go play for not his hometown team, but close in Washington. And so you're looking at, you know, two new starting linebackers, new starting safety, new starting defensive end, new starting right tackle, and a new starting wide receiver, or a different rotation as far as the wide receivers are concerned. I would say from caliber of player, the biggest loss is Michael Pittman Jr. At the same time, he might be one of the more easier players to replace. The reason they let Pitt walk is that they rewarded Pitt with a good contract a couple of years ago. As much as Michael Pittman Jr. is a really good player and a great dude, and you love him in the locker room, probably about a $29 million player, which is what his cap number was going to be this year. And I think because of what you've got in Josh Downs, what you have in Tyler Warren, what Ashton Doolin can do for you, I think the Colts realized they can kind of replace Pittman in the aggregate, and they frankly need that cap money to be spent in other places. So I think the best player that they have to replace is Michael Pittman Jr. I think the toughest void they have to fill is just being so young at linebacker. I don't think the linebacker position was overly great for them last year, but when you have so little returning at one position, that's obviously the thing that catches your eye.
Yeah, definitely. The chemistry gets a little worse, obviously, and the experience, like you mentioned, gets worse. Let's switch gears here to the Indiana Pacers, as I know you have to get going here soon, but I'll ask you a question about the Pacers. We know that the pick, obviously, they trade in the Vika Zubac trade, protected 5 through 9. Obviously, the consensus top three, A.J. DeBanta, Cameron Boozer, and Darren Peterson. And I believe A.J. and Darren have both declared for the draft. This is a question that I've been asking people. If that pick falls to number 4, what would you want to do with it? Do you take someone like Caleb Wilson, or what does that look like?
It's a great question. And this is one of those, I hate to be all draft cliche at you, this is where you take the best available player. Because you literally, you think you've got your starting rotation, probably your top 8 set. You know, your starting lineup next year, if everybody's healthy, knock on wood, is Nembhard, Halliburton, Siakam, Zubac, Nesmith, Toppin, McConnell, Shepard, Jairus Walker, and if you get to add a player in the draft, great. And so I'm not sure there is a specific need. Maybe I would lean slightly more towards kind of a 4, knowing that maybe Obi Toppin is the first player whose kind of contract comes off the books, and you're not sure, you know, you've got to play, you know, people to replace him. If my guard rotation is Nembhard, Halliburton, Nesmith, McConnell, and then Shepard is kind of your fifth guy of that group, it might be tough for that player to get minutes eventually. And so, frankly, whomever you pick is probably, I'm not saying they're going to, like, vote redshirt, but, you know, you're thinking about what they're going to do for you a year or two down the road. So I probably lean towards a big, but really it is whatever your scout, if you get number 4, if your scouts say, hey, this is the guy we think is the 4th best player in the draft, as long as he's not a point guard, I'm taking that guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this isn't necessarily, unlike most teams in the bottom of barrel of this draft, like the Brooklyn Nets or the Sacramento Kings, wherever we're going to pick, if that's 1 through 4, that is not necessarily, in my opinion, a win-now pick like it is for these other teams who desperately need a top 5 talent. Like you said, for us, it's going to be a guy who's going to kind of sit back for a year or two, kind of take it in, get to get with the team chemistry, get to with the team game plan and whatnot, and just kind of get better. And I agree with you. I think the guard rotation is a little too heavy to throw a guy straight in. And now I think if you look at a guy like drafting A.J. DeBanta, I think he could back up Aaron Nesmith, or we even talk about someone like Cam Boozer, and we just mentioned Caleb Wilson's. Obviously, both of those men played the 4, but I'm sure they can stretch out to the 5 and even the 3 if needed, but I completely agree with you on that.
I'm of the opinion, obviously, I think DeBanta's the guy. If you get 1, I'm going with DeBanta. I'm probably almost more comfortable having the 3rd pick than the 2nd. The Peterson stuff at Kansas concerns me. Boozer's kind of the safe pick. Maybe the ceiling isn't as high, but this is also a case where because you've got so many pieces in place for the next couple of years, I'm okay with a guy that the floor is higher than most. Where if it doesn't sound, you know, sexy at picking at 3 and 4 to draft a air quotes role player, but that's okay. You're looking for a guy just to get you 3 or 4 more wins and be an extra rotational piece. You kind of know what you're getting in Boozer. So having the 3rd pick may not be a bad place to be for this basketball team.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of let the other people draft for you. It's not going to be much of a hard decision to draft Darren Peterson if Darren Peterson is not on the board. Final question for you here. Is there any advice you have to any young broadcasters like myself or anyone maybe listening to the show and Nicholas as well, people that want to get into the business that you're doing, whether that's calling high school, college, how can they get their foot in the door, and what is just your biggest advice?
Listen to whatever Mr. Easter tells you. Is John on the other side of the glass right now?
He is.
Give me a thumbs up because I said that.
He's right across from the studio. We got the studio. He's right across. I can't see him right now, but I'm sure once I exit the studio, he'll be very happy.
He is nodding his head accordingly as I say this.
Yes. He just gave me the thumbs up through the window.
If this is your passion, this is great. Just know that, again, as I tell people, you don't have that high school or college weed-out class. You want to be a broadcaster. Life is your weed-out class.
Mm-hmm.
You work nights and weekends. But if this is what you want to do for a living, then I am lucky. I don't feel like I've worked a day in my life. I get paid to go to ball games for a living. It can be a grind. But if this is your passion, pursue it. There are plenty of opportunities here in Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a top 10 sports city in the country because of what goes on here on a regular basis. You want to work in sports? You're in the right place being in Central Indiana.
Absolutely. Cannot agree with you more. Well, Greg, we know you need to go, so thank you for joining us on Hash Marks and Hardwood, and you have a great rest of your weekend, I guess, because it is Friday, so you have a great weekend. Indy 500 is coming up. The fever season is rolling up. Thank you for joining us.
You got it, fellas.
Thank you. That was Greg Rakestraw on WBDG's Giant 90.9 here on Hash Marks and Hardwood. Nicholas, takeaways from that conversation with Mr. Rakestraw.
Yes, you definitely learned a lot, especially how he manages all these other sports that he does and how he's been able to, go from volleyball to football to basketball to whatever else sports he does.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was able to ask it, but my biggest question is still, man, how does one man that knowledgeable about 8,000 sports? It's kind of insane. How can you know every rule about volleyball and then turn on a NFL game, know every rule about that, then turn on a men's tennis game and know every rule about that? It's pretty insane, and a lot of it is studying your craft as well. So, like Greg said, a lot of experience.
Well, I did giggle a little bit when he said, that comes with age and being old, so you know. I giggled just a tiny bit on that, but oh well.
It's experience, though. You get better with experience, obviously. I mean, heck, just looking, listening back to old clips from a year ago, and I'll give Mr. Goins, who's actually not here, I guess I'll also wish Mr. Goins happy retirement coming up here. But he gave me great advice. It was last year after the Brownsburg and Ben Davis sectional game. And it's great advice that I've, been able to take with me, and that's made me way better this year compared to last year. He said, try to quiet down on what you are trying to explain to the audience. So essentially, to listeners, and Mr. Easter told me this as well last year, I would sometimes scream and get out of hand, be too excited. I would almost be too much of a fan on the air. And while I think that's good to be a fan on the air, like Rakestraw said, with experience, you learn that you have to be the painter. You have to be the person that is describing this. You can freak out in occasional spurts. It's good to show excitement, but I think that's one of the biggest things in just 1 year of experience. Now we can imagine these people around the business who have been in this for multiple decades and multiple years, how much they've gotten better as experience grows. And that's just an example for me. That's 365 plus days of experience just to make myself better. But we talked with Greg Rakestraw about if that pick falls to number four or not. Would you take Caleb Wilson? He said best player available. It'd be interesting. I would probably give this a not even a two, maybe a one, honestly, 1% chance of this happening, just looking at the starting lineup. But I am curious what a trade package would look like, including a top four pick. What superstar would be available? And I say superstar because you're trading a top four pick. You need to get a superstar. Not a star, but a superstar. But obviously, I think the chances of that happening are very, very slim.
Yeah. Now, if they were to trade, who would you want on the Pacers team?
See, that's another thing. It's a great question, but you're almost at this point, and I think many people would agree with me. You don't want to... I mean, this team, this core, obviously besides Miles Turner and Benedict Mathurin, they made it to the NBA Finals last year with no improvements. I mean, you add the huge improvement in Ivica Zubac, who is, in my opinion, a better player than Miles Turner. The only thing that Zubac obviously lacks compared to Turner is the spacing. He cannot shoot as well as Miles can. But that's a great question, because I don't think you go after four. You need to keep Pascal in the starting lineup. You definitely are not going to trade for a five and bump Zubac down to the bench. The only positions I think that are even superstar additional are a guard to replace Nembhard in the starting lineup, or the three to replace Nesmith. But I just don't think that should be the plan. I mean, obviously, I'm honestly not sure which teams are going to be selling going into the offseason. My mind kind of goes into the teams that have disappointing seasons. Like, if Detroit loses in the first round here against Orlando, I think they could be a selling team. I think if Milwaukee are obviously going to be a selling team. Denver just lost last night to Minnesota. I think they could be a selling team, dumping off Jamal Murray. That could be a pickup, maybe. I think it just depends on who is going to sell to you. To answer your question right now, though, I think the most the option I can think off the top of my head, maybe Jamal Murray. But like I said, I would rather not take the risk in bumping someone like Andrew Nembhard out of the starting lineup to add a guy that could potentially ruin the team chemistry. I mean, how many times have we seen it? People make the blockbuster trades just to get the talent on their team, but their team's not necessarily good because it's not clicking. Speaking of the NBA, last night, we'll just go over last night and today because, man, this episode would be about 4 years long if I decided to talk about every single game of the playoffs since it's two-week startage. Obviously, last week, we had the WBDG Marathon, but we also played the interview with Coach Stan Binge. So if you missed that, I believe it's uploaded on Audio Boom and Apple Podcast, but if it's not, then I'll make sure to do that. But we had an interview with Coach Stan Binge a couple weeks ago, and it was played during the marathon. But in case you missed that, I'll make sure that gets uploaded. Last night, the Minnesota Timberwolves officially in the Denver Nuggets season. No Anthony Edwards, no problem. No Ayo Dosunmu, no problem. The Timberwolves beat the Nuggets in six as they win that game. They win the series 4-2. The Philadelphia 76ers force a game 7 out of the Boston Celtics. They win last night in Philadelphia 106, goodness gracious, I cannot read. 106-93, forcing a game 7 by a Tyrese Maxey 30.50% field performance to boot, with Joel Embiid's 19.10 rebound double-double, near triple-double, 8 assists. For Boston, Tatum had double-double, 17 points, 11 rebounds, 46 2/10 from the field. A bit of a quieter game for Jaylen Brown, 18 points, 7 of 17 from the field. And then last night, one of the more absurd scores in recent NBA memory, especially at the end there, when it came, or not at the end rather, but at halftime throughout the second quarter, the New York Knicks obliterate and knock out, literally, the Atlanta Hawks from the playoffs. New York wins last night 104-89 as they beat the Atlanta Hawks and 6. OG Anunoby with 29 points, 7 rebounds, 4 three-pointers. Carl Anthony Towns with a 12-point, 11-rebound, 10-assist triple-double. Jaylen Brown, Stockton, 17 points on and 8 assists on 50% from the field. For Atlanta, it was obviously quite a quiet day from everyone, but Jalen Johnson probably had the pick of the bunch for best performances. He had 21 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists on 46% from the field. New York moves on. They will face the winner of Philadelphia and Boston, but right now Minnesota will face San Antonio. We'll see if Anthony Edwards is able to knock off, or not knock off, but he's able to return in general for the T-Wolves when it comes to that series. Tonight, a couple of game-clinching series. Game 6 between Detroit and Orlando. The Pistons currently trail the Magic 3-2. Any thoughts on that game, Nicholas? Who do you think is going to come away? It would be, I don't know what the exact stat is, but it would be one of those rare times a 8 seed is able to be a 1 seed. The Magic looking to cause the upset.
You know what? I'm going to go with an upset here.
You think Orlando are going to pull through and win in 6?
Yeah.
Very well. Paolo Banchero and Cade Cunningham balled last game of this series. 45 points for both of them, nearly beating both of their franchise records in a playoff game for points. I think one of them did, maybe. I'm not sure. I have to double check that. Cleveland-Toronto, the Cavs lead the Raptors 3-2. That game is at 7:30 in Toronto, Canada. I think I'm going to have to go with the Cavs to pull away here and win in 6. Finally, the late game, the West Coast game, 9:30. LeBron and Austin Reeves now back for the Lakers. They go into H-Town to visit the Houston Rockets. And still no Kevin Durant, I believe. But I think this is going to be no Kevin Durant, no problem. I think Houston forces a game 7. Well, with that being said, we are just about out of time here for Hash Marks on Hardwood. Nicholas, any last things you want to ramble about, say, whether it's in the world of sports or in the world in general?
I think next week we should definitely do something about the hockey playoffs since those are going on right now.
Yeah,
too.
Indeed. We just ran out a little bit of time to talk about the NHL, but some great series, and I've been tracking it. We can talk about the NHL next week, absolutely. Next week, we'll have a special guest. Scott Agnes will be joining us on the phone line once again. So a lot of these guests on Hash Marks and Hardwood, as unfortunately the era of Hash Marks and Hardwood is starting to dwindle down here in the first month of May. Obviously, going to be start getting out of school here in a bit. So I haven't confirmed a last date for the show or not. But once that happens, well, obviously, we'll put it here on the WBDG airways so you guys will know. With that being said, any last things, Nicholas?
Have a good weekend.
Hey, it's raining, so stay dry, I guess? I was going to say warm. Stay dry and warm. It's not that warm out. Here in the Indianapolis area right now, it says it feels like 48 degrees. It's only a high of 54. Right now. But with that being said, Bryson Hill.
Stupid Indiana weather.
Stupid Indiana weather indeed. Bryson Hill alongside Nicholas Mountcastle. Once again, thank you so much to Greg Rakestraw for joining us on today's episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood. Hey, do good, be good, have a blessed weekend, y'all. Stay safe. Again, next week, next Friday, 9:15 to 9:55, roughly. Scott Agnes joins us on the phone line. Hash Marks and Hardwood, thank you for listening, and we'll send you off. What song should we do?
I don't care.
Let's do what any song, any good songs here in queue? Here we go. The Grinch. Should we do The Grinch? It's not Christmas time. No, I missed. Oh, I can't spell. Not. Okay, it's not in here. Just kidding. All right, we're going to play something random then. All right, Frank Ocean. Pink and white. Here you go. All right, Frank Ocean, we'll take you off into the weekend. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bryson alongside Nicholas.